Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hi, everybody. We will start with that horrible Cleveland case today and ask, should Ariel Castro get the death penalty if he did everything he's accused of doing? You know, as if his case wasn't creepy enough, now comes this suggestion from the prosecutor that they might charge him with capital murder of the fetuses he allegedly forced at least one of his captives to lose. The law in New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut, by the way, would not allow that charge. So let's discuss the implications. With us for this is Fordham Law Professor Deborah Denno. Professor Denno, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
And listeners, would you like to see Ariel Castro punished with the death penalty if he is guilty of forcing the death of fetuses? 212-433-WNYC. Is our phone number. I wonder if you're going to simply line up based on whether you're pro-choice or not, or maybe pro-capital punishment or not. What do you think about this prospect raised by the prosecutor? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And, Professor, how horrific a situation, first of all, no matter what anyone thinks what the law should do. According to a police report obtained by CNN and the New York Times, Michelle Knight, one of the captives, told police that she had been impregnated several times during the ordeal, but miscarried each time after Castro denied her food for weeks at a time and repeatedly punched her in the abdomen. So just how disgusting, first of all.
Well, certainly it's a terrible, terrible offense.
And I think it's maybe unfortunate that the case against this, you know, worst person in the world kind of character might now take on this extra layer of controversy having to do with the status of the unborn. But that seems to be where the prosecutor wants to take us, huh?
Well, that's right. And there are 23 states that have this type of fetal homicide law that applies to the earliest stage of pregnancy, any state of gestation, conception, fertilization, et cetera.
And again, I'm reading from the Washington Post version of this story. Knight told the police that Castro threatened to kill her if the baby did not survive, and at one point the baby stopped breathing. And that's actually on the – sorry, this, I think this article is confused, that that's referring to the Amanda Berry case after she did give birth to the baby. But the prosecutor, Timothy McGinty, said, quote, capital punishment must be reserved for those crimes that are truly the worst examples of human conduct. The reality is we still have brutal criminals in our midst who have no respect for the rule of law or human life. The law of Ohio calls for the death penalty for those most depraved criminals who commit aggravated murder during the course of a kidnapping, unquote. So Slate has a piece on this today, which explains that under Ohio law, a murder charge can be applied for killing, quote, an unborn member of the species Homo sapiens that is or was carried in the womb of another, unquote. An unborn member of the species Homo sapiens that is or was carried in the womb of another. Now, that sounds like it would outlaw abortion, but it doesn't. How do you understand the distinction?
Well, that's right. I mean, and I think this is the slippery slope that a lot of people are concerned with these type of fetal homicide laws. In Ohio, there is an exception. There is a division under that statute that you just mentioned that makes it clear that this would not apply to a situation in which a pregnant woman is going to a physician to have to perform an abortion, and that's the case in many of these states where they do have an exception for abortion.
And my understanding is that these laws in these 23 states are hugely controversial, and when they've been debated and passed, have triggered the obvious abortion rights debate. Do you know if these laws have been political surrogates for anti-abortion laws pushed by the movement to outlaw abortion?
I think you see a tug of war among both groups, both pro-choice and abortion or whatever groups. I mean, there is a tussle.
And am I right? Do you know the local laws? My understanding is that New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, none of our three local states have such a law. This charge that the prosecutor is considering in Ohio could not be brought here.
That's right. In New York and New Jersey, there is no such law. It's just in 23 other states.
So in the Ohio law, for instance, a fetus is defined as an unborn member of the species Homo sapiens, as I said. Is that a euphemism for a fetus as a person, or could an anti-legal abortion group use the law to bring charges against a woman having an abortion? You said there's an exception written in, but could they say the language is there, it's plain and straightforward, it does not say that, you know, the unborn member of the species Homo sapiens is not a person, so court, you have to act.
Well, there's several issues here. You know, of course, what constitutes an abortion in Ohio and these other states that have unlawful termination of another's pregnancy is an offense. The definition is during the period that begins with fertilization that continues unless and until a live birth occurs. So in Ohio and these other states, as soon as fertilization occurs, as soon as an egg is fertilized, that is going to be an entity that falls under this statute. Nonetheless, that there is a provision in the statute that prohibits prosecution for a woman's consent to an abortion by a physician, for example. But you're correct. I mean, there you know, part of the controversy is a slippery slope where individuals who are against abortion would perhaps try to use these statutes to argue that that any kind of abortion could be criminalized.
James in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, James.
Yes. How are you?
Okay.
I'd like to say, first of all, I am against the death penalty, and I am very, very strongly pro-choice. I think every woman has a right to decide for herself whether to carry her pregnancy to term or not, and no one else has any right to interfere with that decision. It's between her and her doctor. However, this case really raises very, very interesting questions, and it points to the complexity of real life, and our laws have to somehow learn how to accommodate the complexities of real life. It's not all black or white. The simple fact is, terminating your pregnancy because you no longer, for whatever reason, you don't wish to continue it is clearly not murder. It is not murder in any sense of the word. On the other hand, if some other person comes along and horrifically, you know, kicks you in the stomach or tries to terminate your pregnancy against your wishes, that is clearly murder. And I don't think that is an inconsistent view of the matter. I think that's simply a view of the matter which takes into account the fact that life is a very complex phenomenon. This also raises a very interesting point, which I've been saying for a long time now, that one way to attack the pro-life people who claim that abortion is murder is to point to the very simple fact that they themselves recognize this complexity in that they are not advocating the death penalty for women who terminate their pregnancies. They might be very severe about the doctors and medical people who assist in a termination of pregnancy, but I've never heard an abortion, an anti-abortion mm-hmm. person say something to the effect that, well, we need to execute these women who murder
right.
their fetuses.
In fact, and I've had this conversation with anti-abortion activists on the air, they will never even state what they want a penalty for a woman to be. I think they know that that's a losing argument politically, and so they'll only focus on the doctors, the providers, and just not even go there. So there's obviously, you know, a political hinge right there that that those groups want to avoid. But he and James, thank you for your call. So, Professor, he makes a distinction there that I guess these laws, like in Ohio, actually make, which is that the killer of the fetus would necessarily have attacked the woman in order to kill the fetus.
Well, that's right, and I agree with what James said. And actually, as you're indicating, the Ohio law does as well. I did want to emphasize too that that this is without the consent of the woman. So when a woman gets an abortion, it's with her consent. When another person unlawfully terminates that woman's pregnancy, that's without her consent. So it may have been a different issue, and or it may be a different issue if a woman says, look, I just don't want this pregnancy anymore. Will you starve me and kick me in the stomach so I miscarry? As opposed to this kind of situation in the Ariel Castro case, where that certainly did not seem to occur. No facts suggest that.
Diane in Long Branch, you're on WNYC. Hi, Diane.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
I'm thinking that he should go to jail and be raped repeatedly and then murdered by the inmates. Isn't that what they normally do? Seriously, I think that capital punishment is too good for him.
Thank you for your call. That's one way to handle it. Lori and Woodmere, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lori.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm getting, you know, irate just listening, you know, that this whole thing is now leading towards, you know, pro-abortion, anti-abortion stance. This man, you know, the crime that he did is so hideous. And as a mother and as a woman, this is the greatest fear that could possibly come true. He didn't take the life of 10 years, 20 years. He took the life of 30 years. And I think you said before that Ohio law, the capital punishment is for a hideous, depraved crime. I don't remember your exact terminology, but in my opinion, this is a hideous, a ghastly crime, and I think he deserves the death penalty just for that.
So even if there was no fetus involved, you're saying this was so hideous that he should be put in prison given capital punishment for the way he held captive and abused these women?
He chained them. He took 30 years of their lives. To focus on the fetus. And I'm scared that if the prosecutor focuses on the fetus, you know, it's going to be a very difficult case to prove. And if he gets off from that angle, then what's going to happen to him?
Lori, thank you. And I guess that is one possible legal outcome, that he wouldn't be convicted of that, though he would be convicted of crimes for the many other things that he did. I don't know. How do you see the range of ways that this could play out in court, including or not including this particular charge, Professor?
Well, I agree with Lori that, it may be very difficult to prove this unlawful termination of another's pregnancy simply because the fetuses aren't going to be available. They would have no proof that happened or that it happened that the way one of these captives said. Nonetheless, in this country, there's no death penalty for rape or kidnap, so that could never happen. Nonetheless, even if he were not charged, Ariel Castro was not charged with unlawful termination of a pregnancy, he could be charged with certainly with rape, multiple rapes, and kidnapping. And with those kinds of charges and the penalties that accompany them and the nature of these acts, it's more than likely he would never see the light of day.
How would they need to prove what this one captive is charging about, you know, not just raping her, but then causing the deaths of these fetuses through punching her in the abdomen or starving her? I mean, if there's no physical evidence, could they ever prove that in court?
Well, they could, because we have cases where you can charge somebody with homicide and convict them with homicide without ever finding the body. I mean, this is the majority of states in this country. So you don't need a body. You wouldn't need a fetus. It would be based on her testimony, perhaps anything that he would say to that effect. We already know, at least in the news accounts, that he has confessed to many acts. We don't know whether it's these particular acts. The other women in the house might also testify to that effect. We don't know yet whether he did the same thing to them.
Right.
So just to emphasize, need a fetus.
I mean, I'm ready to believe anything about this guy, honestly. But in a court of law, if the other women didn't see it, if he didn't confess to it, does it just go away because there's no proof?
Well, it would be a much harder case to prove, but nonetheless, there's so many other charges against him that he'll never get out of prison the way this case is unraveling. So whether there may not be the death penalty or an execution, and you know, I want to remind people too that you know a death penalty is on the wane in this country, whether people like it or not. They're very far fewer death penalty cases, and even when people get the death penalty, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're ever going to be executed. So even with that, we can't be rest assured that Ariel Castro would be executed.
Nancy in the East Village, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I think that we need to break this mythological idea that one man can have power over women, which I think in his case is completely obscene, but I don't think it's so unusual. I think it's part of a fantasy. And to do that would be to put this guy through some kind of training where he is forced to see the psychological damage that these kind of incidents and even lesser incidents of all kinds of molestation has on women in their future adult lives, over and over again, watch documentary footage, be forced to finally change his consciousness and then be made to give back in some way to children in the prison setting. To kill him is too easy.
I don't want him near any of my kids.
No, not, well, maybe making clothes for children, doing something where he has to give back to society. To take him out, it's too mm-hmm. easy, and I think this type of, maybe make a film of this to be presented to other people with this instinct, because he's not the only one, obviously.
Nancy, thank you. Does the law allow for anything like that? Let's say capital punishment aside, to make him emotionally or psychologically confront the horrors of what he did, assuming conviction, in a case like this or any kind of case?
I mean, the restitution in this country is really unusual in the way that Nancy was describing, and I can't see it in a case like this. He would just be put in prison and punished. I mean, we generally see imprisonment as a punishment and not something where you're necessarily giving back, even though in theory it seems like a very good idea.
Deborah Denno, Fordham Law Professor, thank you very much for coming on and talking about this wrinkle in the Cleveland case. It's just such a disgusting display of, you know, the worst that humanity has to offer from everything we could tell. I think it's unfortunate that the case against this guy might take on this extra layer of controversy having to do with the status of the unborn, but it looks like the prosecutor may want to go there. So thank you very much.
Well, that's right. And with hope, with the media coverage, that we may learn ways to prevent this from happening again.
Thanks again. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Republican mayoral hopeful John Katsimatidis. Stay with us.